Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's one of the buzziest trends in the wine world, but some of you may be hearing about this for the first time, natural wine. Although the concept has been around for centuries, the demand for eco-friendly has steadily grown over the last decade. Enthusiasts say natural wine is returning to its purest form and a movement away from industrialized production without the use of pesticides, herbicides, and additives. A Google search reveals a bevy of blog posts touting a number of health benefits, including digestive health and less severe hangovers. But what makes a wine a natural wine, and how do the health claims stack up against science? To help us unpack all of this and give us a taste of how crush season is going so far in Northern California, we've invited Dr. Anita Oberholster, a wine and grape expert at UC Davis. Welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You know, we were having this discussion among the Insight team. I've heard of natural wine, but for people who may be hearing about this for the first time, some of my colleagues had never heard of it. Can you explain what it actually is and more about its roots, so to speak?
Yes, I suppose, you know, we talk about traditional conventional wine. So these days they say natural wine is going back to the roots, right? Where modern winemaking, we like to have a little bit more control, ensure that the product we serve in a bottle will be stable and the quality that, you know, the consumer expect. The idea is with natural wine, you're going back to the old days where they had very little that they could add to wine and was available to them. So that's the idea of it. But I have to say, you know, even conventional winemaking, yes, is heavily regulated and there's things you can add, but it's very little that you can actually add. And most of the components you add is actually natural or a synthetic version of something that's natural. So I do want to say that even conventional wine in general is pretty natural.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you go to wine that's made from organic grapes, you know, and organic grapes, yes, they're heavily regulated. They have to grow their grapes without using chemical fertilizers or pesticides and herbicides. They need to use natural compounds. And then you get wine that's organic wine. So even then, that organic process, they really try not to use any synthetic additives. Now, natural wine goes a step beyond that, right? They try to add absolutely nothing. Now, in general, that would mean that they would use the yeast that comes in from the grapes or floating around in your winery to ferment the wines. They would avoid, you know, adjusting the acidity of wine or adding anything like fining agents to define or refine the wine. They don't even want to filter the wine, right? So it's really
And that's when you get the natural sediments in it, right? In some of the bottles?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's why for a natural wine, often there may be sediments in there. And many natural wines, you know, people's like, oh, it has more of a funky taste and so on. Well, the thing is, many of the things we do in conventional winemaking, like adding sulfur dioxide to control microbial populations, even acidifying wine, you know, lower pH, microbes don't like it that much. And even sterile filtration is to remove those characters and stabilize the wine. You're taking those tools away from natural winemaking. Not to say that there aren't natural wines out there that can be great, right? And, you know, I always say the best wine is the wine you like. So, you know, if there's a wine you like, it's a natural wine, wonderful. The thing to remember about natural wine is it's more an idea. The people that make natural wines, they said, we want to do this, but it's not regulated. So it's not like if you pick up that bottle of wine, you know for a fact that they didn't add anything to that wine.
Oh,
and
really?
That's something important. Yes.
Oh, even
that's
in California and how regulated the wine industry is.
Yes. So the wine is regulated, you know, by the TTB or what we call the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. And so they will, what is on the label, but natural wine per se, being able to say a wine is natural is an idea. It's not regulated. Organic wines and organic grapes, those things are regulated.
Hmm. So organic and natural wine, as I'm learning from you, they have similarities, but natural wine takes it a step further and is produced differently and also comes with less regulations when looked at when compared to using organic grapes, as you just said. Why do you think this came about? I mean, is it just kind of a trendy fad, or, you know, or is there actually some benefits to having natural wine and adding it to, you know, the arsenal of the wine options we have here in Northern California?
Well, you know, who doesn't like the word natural, right? So yes, I think it's a little bit of people think it is healthier, but in general, there really is no science behind proving that it is healthier than organic wines or conventional wines. Something to remember, yes, in both organic wines and natural wines, they try to limit the use of sulfur dioxide, right? So sulfur dioxide can be, and you know, it's a very good preservative. We use it to control microbial populations. We use it to as an antioxidant. So, and there are sensitivities to sulfur dioxide. And it's true that in organic and natural wines, they try and limit the use or use none. Something to remember, though, is yeast do produce sulfur dioxide. So it's not like there will be ever zero in your wine. There will always be a little bit there. And in general, only about 1% of the population is really sensitive to sulfur dioxide. So that may not be the cause of your headache.
Yeah, that may not be the cause of your headache. That was going to lead me to like one of the health benefits, because I've been to some natural wine bars and they're like, you won't get a hangover, you know? And so obviously that sounds great, you know, on a Friday night. But is that actually the case?
I want to say that's wishful thinking. At this stage, you know, mainly why you get a hangover is because you drank too much alcohol. I'm sorry, but basically alcohol is the main culprit there, and it dehydrates you as well. So I would say drink a lot of water. If you're going to take part in any alcoholic beverage, that's a really good idea. And having alcohol with food is also a very good idea. And moderation is key.
Yeah, moderation is definitely key. You talked about how there is a taste difference between natural wine. Is the shelf life different as well?
You know, it will really depend on the wine. I don't want to say that all natural wines will have a shorter shelf life. Neither do I want to say all natural wine will have funky aromas and stuff. Because I think I could safely say there may be a larger percentage of natural versus conventional wines that may have a shorter shelf life. And just because they don't have all these tools that we can use to increase our probability of a stable wine. That's what I would say. You know, I'm sure there are great natural wines out there. Mm.
When you were interviewed for the New York Times on this very topic, you said that there's a wide perception that when you're drinking something cleaner, you're drinking something that's healthier. You know, we already kind of debunked the reduction in hangovers. But another one are these like probiotics. I think of like hard kombucha, you know, people who like drinking that thinking that, you know, oh, they're getting some, you know, healthy it's healthy for their gut. And so there's a similar claim being made with natural wine. Also, is that the case as well, or is that also debunked?
Unfortunately, I'm going to go no. You know, the thing is, if you have, you know, wine is defined as something containing alcohol between 7% and 14%. That amount of alcohol kills most of those probiotics. So no, I would say all wines are pretty similar as far as gut health goes. Mm.
Is this taking off in other places, or is this just kind of like a U.S. or California thing? Are there actually guidelines or regulations in other countries, maybe Europe?
You know, it is taking off in Europe as well. I think, and once again, the meaning of the word is different depending on what country you're talking about. And even, you know, organic regulations differ depending on what country you're talking about. But no, it doesn't seem at this point in time that it's really regulated anywhere. Not that I'm aware of. Mm.
You know, when hitting home on the claim that it doesn't contain toxic pesticides amid an already pretty heavily regulated industry in California, I mean, what is included in conventional wines? And if so, is it enough to be concerned about?
You know, Yes, in conventional wines, you are allowed to use pesticides and herbicides. But you know, the Environmental Protection Agency look at these things, and before they approve the use of any of these chemicals on grapes. And then most of them are removed during the winemaking process. It's true if you go and analyze wines, because our analytical techniques have improved so much, we can see things at the parts per billion level. And they're there, you can see some of these, but the fact is they're safe. It's considered as being safe. The levels there are not something to be concerned about. But you know, I get the idea that people would like to consume something that has no pesticides and fungicides, but you know, most foods do contain some of them.
Mm. You know, when I think of wine, I think of chocolate, I think of coffee and all the studies that surround these three things. I think I read a study yesterday saying that drinking like coffee like actually extends your life, you know, and then there's another study that says the opposite. Anyways, at the end of the day, wine is an alcoholic beverage that in excess can be harmful. But generally speaking, is wine good or bad for you? And does it depend on if it's red or white or sparkling or what have you?
You know, in general, and this is the thing, it's like that study in coffee. I saw that too. If you only look at something with one little sliver, right, you always have to look at everything as a whole. So in general, moderate wine consumption, and people need to realize moderate is like 5 ounces a day for a woman, you know, a glass of wine per se. And for a man, it's two servings of 5 ounces. With food is generally considered could have some health benefits and has not been shown to correlate that strongly with cancer risk. So it depends on you as a person. You know, we're all individuals, but I would say in general, yes, it can help with cardiovascular disease, can help with hypertension, it can help with some cancers. But now they've only also shown that it could increase by like 1% your risk of certain cancers, but so does, you know, cured meat. So at the end, you need to look at all these studies and look at your own risk versus benefit ratio. So I would say red wine can be slightly more healthy for you because it have more antioxidants than a white wine. But in general, I would say if you like wine like I do, having a glass with wine with dinner is probably the best way to consume alcohol. And at this stage, there's no convincing evidence that that's bad for you.
Mm. So I guess what I'm hearing from you is we can't just read the headline that it's favorable to us, and kind of, we actually have to do some more research, and moderation is always key.
Absolutely. You know, and for me, it's part of my quality of life to have that glass of wine in the evening.
Yeah, yeah. And for a lot of people as well. Well, given that you're also in the thick of crush season, which is such a busy time for you and your colleagues, what does this current season look like?
You know, I'm going to use that word that I really hate. It depends. Depends on who you talk to and where you are. It's been a very interesting and I would say a difficult season. We had the frost during spring that in some areas really called shatter. Now, shatter is when you don't have good fruit set. And basically, it can impact your yield greatly. So it's really pockets of areas where the yield is much lower. Then we also had, you know, some issues with, we had a heat wave that came on and ripening happened in 3 days instead of 2-3 weeks. Again, certain areas, higher elevations mm-hmm. that have cooler night temperatures didn't see the same impact. So it's going to be interesting. Overall, I don't think it's going to be a high yield year. This is my opinion. The crush report will come out in January of 2023 and we will see. But, you know, I think it really depends. Some say they have great quality, others are concerned. So it really is going to depend on the specific region. And I wouldn't even go Napa Valley. It's pockets within those grape growing regions.
Right. Even in our backyard alone. I mean, of course, you have like Napa and Sonoma, but you have the foothills, you have down through the Delta. And then obviously you expand, you know, beyond our region, you have coastal regions as well going down to the Central Coast. And they all grow different varietals and they all have different impacts of our climate and these extreme pendulum swings that we've been experiencing. How are you teaching this in the classroom? Because unfortunately, this isn't the first time that we've had, you know, potentially a challenged harvest.
You know, to to be a farmer is a difficult profession. That's what I'm going to say, because you're really dependent on the elements. And it's really about being flexible and adjusting your farming. And for a winemaker, because the fruit they receive is different every year, because it's really impacted by the climate. I think people overestimate how much control, how much you can change a wine in the winery. The biggest influence is the grape. Mm. And you basically have to adjust. Now, here's the thing, you know, when you have heat waves, the best way to adjust and help the plant not become too stressed is water. Now we have a drought as well. So your access to water also have a big influence. And we are doing other things, you know, different grape varieties that you can grow, shade cloths, changing your canopy management. You know, I think farmers have become more and more sensitive to the climate changes, looking at the weather, planning ahead, changing picking time, changing, you know, winemakers have changed their winemaking style slightly when they have to. Everybody is being flexible and looking at basically the signs, the climate signs, and trying to produce the best grapes they can and make the best wine that they can.
I remember visiting you a couple years ago and we were discussing a smoke taint. It was following a season of wildfires, and obviously that has continued and intensified in the years since. What have you learned about the impacts of wildfires, and particularly the particulate matter that's in smoke?
You know, the thing is, we've so far have been just substantiating some of the things that we really thought. And, you know, research, unfortunately, very slow. And I hope in 5 years from now, I can tell you much more specific things. But basically, what I do want to tell the general public is, when you see smoke, what you're seeing is the particulate matter. And that particulate matter is really not what's the cause of what we will call smoke impact on grapes, and could result in a wine that may be tainted or smoke tainted. The compounds that causes that are called volatile phenols, and they're present in toasted oak and things like that. So don't be concerned. They don't really have a health concern. They have a quality impact of too much of them absorb into the grapes, because grapes, unfortunately, are like little sponges. So yes, to predict whether something is going to be smoke impacted is really difficult. And we're trying to work now on low-cost sensors and fast throughput methods that can quickly tell a grower, yes, I have an impact or not. Because the compounds using the impact is invisible to the naked eye, and they actually break down pretty quickly. So we tell people, if you get smoke and it took about 24 hours to get to you, your risk is very, very low. So people just need to keep that in mind. It's actually a very, very complex field. And like most things, like even the climate adjustment, is we need to understand the fundamental science. Why, you know, how does it work? What's happening? Then you can start thinking in ways. Now we understand how it works. What can we do to help? How can we mitigate it in the vineyard? How can we mitigate it in the winery? But, you know, because this is a huge issue, we're like working on everything at the same time. We are looking at things you can spray, natural things you can spray in the vineyard that can actually protect the berry against the smoke. And we're looking at, unfortunately, things like fining agents that you can use in a winery to remove the excess amount of these compounds that could give you overpowering smoky characters.
A lot of work for you and your colleagues. Dr. Anita Oberholster is a wine and grape expert at UC Davis. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invite.
That is it for Insight today. You can learn about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us, insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.